it will probably haunt me till the day I die. I saw people hit and slapped, taunted. Every way that you could torture a human being, I saw inflicted. And I never really believed that there was such a thing as evil until I went to work in that care home.
And these are people, old men and women at the end of their lives, weeping.
Yeah. They were cowering like in corners. It was horrendous.
Helene, does this bear any relation to life in the Mid-Staffs hospital where you were working?
There are potentially elements of it, but it was sort of more broad spectrum, really. There were a lot of system problems and failures.
They were fiddling the books, weren't they? They were making it look like the famous four-hour waiting time. What were they doing?
The four-hour target became more important than the patient care, so they were basically falsifying the record, so it looked as though we were achieving that target. The importance of achieving that came well above the care of the patients, but actually the staff as well.
Now, we've all been into an emergency unit. Many of us have been into a care home. Hardly any of us have been into GCHQ, where you worked, Catherine Gunn. And what was happening that was sending your life upside down?
Well, it was the build-up to the war in Iraq. In late 2002, I received an email from NSA.
That's the American National Security Agency. What was it asking you to do that affected your conscience?
Well, I viewed it as a request to undermine the diplomatic processes of the UN and to authorise a war in Iraq.
So, three very different experiences, but a whistleblowing moment lies ahead of you in your life. Was there a moment, Eileen, was there something that made you change?
When a young carer came to me and said he was also seeing the abuse, I can remember just feeling huge relief because I thought, I'm not on my own. They'll do something now. There's more than one of us. And then he said the words that will stick in my head forever. There's six others and none of us had spoken to each other.
And that was your moment of decision, was it?
Well, I went home and for the first time I actually told my husband because I hadn't told him. I was kind of living in a nightmare. And he said he knew there was something wrong because I'd go home and we'd watch TV and he'd say something about what had been on. And I hadn't seen any of it because all was in my head all the time. I said, I'm going to have to go to social services. I'm going to lose my job. If, you know, they'll know it's me and I'm going to lose my job. And can we cope? Because my husband was living on a pension.
And what did he tell you?
He said, go.
Follow your conscience, basically.
In all my life, I'd never fought for anything. I'd never got angry. I was a mild, placid person. And I just felt this absolute rage. But it was ice cold. And it was like, it wasn't even my voice anymore.
Helene, is there anything in that that you're nodding at?
Yes, I can very much relate to it all, particularly sort of having tried to raise issues internally through incident reporting and speaking to managers.
It was a trigger moment.
Yeah, I think there were two particular things. There was one particular case where a patient was so badly treated, went home, returned the next day as an emergency and died. Although the actual cause of her death potentially wouldn't have been prevented, the horrendous care and the lack of dignity she experienced in the last 24 hours of her life, as Eileen has said, will haunt me for the rest of my life. And then also the pressure from two sisters, particularly in the department, senior sisters, who were threatening, bullying, swearing at us to falsify the breach time. But I thought something just has to change.
Catherine, uniquely, of all three accounts, you were about to break the law. You were about to break the Official Secrets Act. Did it feel like a betrayal of your country?
No, it didn't feel like a betrayal of my country. I felt perhaps that I was betraying my own section where I was working.
Friends of yours?
Yes, my manager and my colleagues. It was a small department. I completely agree with Eileen and Helena. I had the same sort of anger when I read the email. The wagon was going so quickly that time was running out, and I just felt that I had to get that email out as quickly as possible.
So all three of you have been living with an incomprehensible problem, and then suddenly a well of anger seems to be sort of exploded. Was it in anger you acted, Eileen, or did you suddenly become detective?
When this carer came to me, that had been on the Thursday afternoon. I'd already decided I was going to social services on the Monday morning. I had to write my statement over that weekend, and I still have that statement. There's 46 pages, and most of it is smudged in tears. Your trust is gone. I didn't even trust social services, and I can remember holding onto the paper saying, these are statements about the abuse of people, and if you don't do something, we'll go to the media.
And did you gather any evidence from the care home itself?
Yes, I had the keys to the office, and we waited until the manager had gone, and I had to go. We didn't even have the time to look at whose records. We just photocopied everything. We hid it in the linen basket, and we took it out of the building.
Did you feel good at that point, after so much misery and sadness that you still are haunted by? Is that a moment that you felt alive?
It wasn't good. It was the day that social services came into the building and the police came that I went home, and for the first time in months, I actually slept.
I'm hearing you, Catherine, and you, Helene, want to come in. And in your case first, Catherine, what did you do?
I saw the email on Friday and I just printed it off straight away and posted it. I had no idea what was going to happen to it after that. When I took the email out of the building, I immediately felt guilty in the sense that I knew I was breaking the law. Mm. I felt as though everybody could see straight through me. I felt as though I had guilty written across my forehead until I posted it. And then once it had left my hands, I was still quite nervous for maybe a week or so. I was waiting for it and nothing happened. For 3 weeks, I was thinking, well, maybe nothing's going to come of it. Maybe I was rash. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. Maybe, you know, it's better if nothing came out.
But in fact, we now know it was published in The Observer. Now, to you, Helene, once you started acting, were you in fear?
Yes, very much so. And in my case, it wasn't particularly thought out. It was at the end of a particularly difficult late shift. I went home at sort of 11 o'clock at night and I thought enough's enough, and I sat up till 1 o'clock in the morning and wrote quite a brief statement at that point, but outlining some of the horrendous things that had happened on that particular shift alone. Went in on the early shift at 7 o'clock the next morning and handed it to the divisional managers and more senior management. It caused a huge rift and obviously a very difficult working environment.
And as Catherine was saying, she felt she was betraying her small team. Did you feel, even though you felt correct in what you did you feel that part of you was treacherous?
I don't think I felt treacherous because I knew what I was saying was absolutely right and honest, and I also knew it was the right thing to do. However, obviously you have a loyalty to your workplace and to the people you're working alongside.
Now, you all have very different tales of what happened next, because Catherine, you were charged and you could have gone to prison. We'll come to that. Helene, you were followed, you were threatened. But Eileen, did you feel that life got easier?
It was an absolute nightmare. We were spat at. There's 1,000 ways to make someone's life a misery each day, but I would say it was like you had to walk into a dark tunnel, and each day that tunnel got longer, and you actually were frightened and you didn't know when the next attack would come.
Because you'd already blown the whistle at this point.
Yes, and they knew it was us because we'd gone internally. We were blacklisted. We applied for lost count, I think over 400 jobs at the last count. Every time you said, oh, can I have an application form? They'd say, yes, what's your name and address? Oh, are you one of them people? Well, yes. Oh, sorry, the job has just gone.
Helene, what about you? Did life improve after your actions?
No, initially it got a lot worse. The threats and bullying and intimidation increased towards myself and others who supported what I was saying. There were sort of physical threats of intimidation. I was followed into a changing sort of toilet cubicle, and the door was locked behind me, barring my way out, and I was threatened. I was threatened about walking to my car at night following a late shift at work, you know, saying that the car park's very dark, you want to watch your back. And then I was also threatened around sort of professional issues. So I was told not to check certain drugs with certain members of staff, particularly controlled drugs, because they were going to make it look as though I'd made a drug error. The bullying and threats increased to the point where I had to leave.
I mean, we know now from history, don't we, that your whistleblowing happened in about 2007. And it
yes.
was in 2014, 7 years later, after the public inquiry, you were given an OBE, but it took 7 years, didn't it, for this whole scandal to be exposed in Midstaffs. And in the meantime, you had to get out. You had to get yourself another job. And Catherine, was the whole force of the law brought to book with you before the prosecution was eventually dropped?
They arrested me and held me on bail for 8 months. And then in November of 2003, they decided to charge me with the breach of Official Secrets Act.
Was that a very frightening feeling? Because everyone knows it's a very severe law with a very long penalty.
I had, by that time, I had an amazing team behind me. So although we were completely bowled over by the fact that they decided to charge me, we were prepared for it.
So actually, of the three accounts, your nightmare ended once you blew the whistle. You were supported by people who gave you confidence. And in this period of time of possible jail, you didn't feel as intimidated and frightened as our other guests today.
No, I wasn't bullied. I mean, as soon as I confessed to leaking the email to my line manager, she actually was very caring and supportive. She knew what the next steps would be, and I was walked out of GCHQ and I never went back in again.
Finally, I've got to ask you to reflect on the news. We've had another whistleblowing case, this time in banking. What do you feel about people like you, Eileen?
I've learnt that as a country, we don't value whistleblowers. There was nobody there for us at all, no organisation, no support whatsoever.
And Helene, what did you learn and what do you advise others?
I would obviously do it again, and I would encourage anybody else to. That said, it's not easy. Things are getting better, but there is still a lot more work to be done. I think Eileen's absolutely right. We do need to strengthen the law around whistleblowing and protection. And although, as it stands, there is potential that you can receive some compensation, but that's only after you've suffered a horrendous detriment. We need to prevent that from happening in the first place.